Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Transformation Cafe. Hello, everyone. Join us tonight for another hour of life listener style conversation and discussion and learning as we nosh on the current events and trends with a spiritual perspective. You can join in the conversation of our show by calling 646-727-3206. That's 646-727-3206. Or you can go online to the chat area. We'd love to hear from you. So let's get started and introduce our diners for tonight.
Okay. Thank you, Miss Gloria, our wonderful announcer. This is Robin Misevich, one of the regular diners here at the Transformation Cafe. We thank you for checking in live here on Tuesday nights at 9 p.m. And if you're checking us out by demand, we thank you for checking us out afterwards. I love that. That's such a nice convenience nowadays with this modern technology. Isn't it a wonderful thing? Well, tonight we have one of our guest chefs back in the house, Mr. T.D. Austin, and we'll talk to Ted in a minute. But Mr. Jamie's still here. Hey, Mr. Jamie, thanks for kind of scooting into the table here. How are you doing tonight?
Mr. Jamie is doing most excellent.
Most excellent. I love that. That's good. How's the weather and what's going on in Seattle?
Well, it's still kind of warm, but not as warm as everywhere else. We're kind of having the tail end of our summer right at the end of summer. It's amazing.
It's
Jamie calling from Seattle, Washington. I'm a tattoo artist. I have a shop up here. Been up here about almost 16 years in November. I like to think I people along with their psychic armor and empathize.
empathizing with that kind of good stuff.
That's me.
That's you. That's great. We have another caller with the last four of 8538. How are you doing tonight?
Doing good.
Doing good. How are you, Miss Tony?
I'm doing terrific.
I'm so glad you decided to come up and scoot up to the table. We have a guest chef tonight, Mr. T.D. Austin. He was here last year, and we're going to talk a little bit about his book and some of the wonderful things that he does. So thanks for joining us, Miss Tony. Yeah. So we have Ted. Ted is T.D. Austin, and he's the author of People of the Bear Mother. And since last year when we talked to him, he has become a finalist for the International Book Award Review and also USA Book News. So congratulations on that. That's pretty awesome.
Thank you.
Yeah. And one of the nice, exciting things, too, is about, 2 weeks ago, I think I saw you, Ted, he's let me know that now the book is available on ebook. So you can get it a hardback, you can get a softback, you can get a Kindle, you can get a Nook, and you can even get an e-publisher book and also audio.
Yeah.
So, oh, my goodness, there's no reason
Wow.
why you cannot get this book. I know. Isn't that amazing?
That is amazing.
Although I am in the process of republishing the book with a division of Hay House, Balboa Press, and we're kind of in the process now of taking them down from the previous publisher and putting them up on the Balboa Press, so it may or may not be easy to find at this particular point in time. A couple more weeks and we'll have it all. The transition will be complete.
Is it still going to be available on Amazon?
Yes.
Balboa
Press, they put it up on everything.
On everything.
Yes.
Okay. Okay, and you can just go to Ted's website, which is www.tdaustinaustinps.com. So that's another place to have things available. And you know what? He's done such a wonderful job with his research stuff. If you put Google in there and put T.D. Austin, you know what? You're either going to find a guy who lives in Florida on Facebook. Are you going to find Mr. Ted in there? So just be looking for the People of the Bear Mother. There you go. It's just a wonderful kind of a thing. So let's go back a little bit and tell people what's going on with that book, because you've got one actually in the works that you're talking about now. That's interesting. We'll kind of hopefully get people a little bit ready for the newest book here, but it probably won't be out till next year, I'm sure, because you'll be working.
That's right.
Like that.
I'm still working on it.
So for Christmas this year, one of these books you got to have is People of the Bear Mother, and I always think it's just fascinating that And Ted, I would love for you to just kind of go around all this. He's really he's just a lover of archaeological findings and research and things like that. So tell me a little bit, how did you get started in even creating the novel?
Well, I've always been interested in history and anthropology and archaeology, and there were just things that would catch my interest over the years, and I didn't really know why I was keeping notes or taking special interest in various areas or archaeological finds until I kind of had this creative spiritual opening, and I began channeling what I now recognize as past lives. And the first the scene opened up, and I was looking through the eyes of this young woman sitting in a lodge, kind of like a bark lodge kind of thing, and was there with my mother, and this old shaman pokes his head through the door flap. And I knew instantly that where I was and what time period it was, and it was at this cave in the recently discovered cave in south of France. And I had bought a book of beautiful art book of all of the animal art and the cave paintings from this cave some years ago. And I remember looking at that artwork and saying, I know what that means, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so when this kind of channeling of some past life, when I was this young woman, all I knew was that I was going into that particular cave. I was going to be taken into the cave by this old shaman, and he was going to ask me to do to add a new piece of animal art to this cave. And in that lifetime, I was a gifted artist, and that's all I knew of the story as it kind of unfolded and flowed out of me onto the page. And I just went along for the ride. I didn't know, I didn't have an outline or, any such thing that most writers will usually have. It just came out of me, and I didn't know how it was going to end or what the experiences this young woman would have or how this experience of the cave and being initiated as a shaman would change her life and all of her lifetimes thereafter. But that's kind of how I got into this. This beautiful art book of the animal art really inspired me, and that's how this book had its inception.
So when you saw that original book of all the different drawings and stuff, did you have some sense of just like, wow, look what I did?
No, I didn't. Not at that time.
Not at that time.
As the book unfolded, as I wrote this, I remember thinking, on this one particular piece of artwork that's in the deepest part of the cave, I looked at that and I said to myself, that looks like that's been painted over. Looks like something has been added. And I read studied this particular book, and the archaeologists that found this cave, and they meticulously excavated it. It's not open to the public, and it never will be. The French government won't allow it because so many of the other caves have been ruined by too many tourists, And they have learned that this cave had been used or occupied for a couple of thousand years, maybe two or maybe three times in history before the cave was sealed by a rock slide up until the present. So it's this pristine cave still has human footprints in the mud, and it's just as it was 25,000 years ago, the last time any human being set foot into the cave.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because it's interesting. If you go online, it's talking about that the paintings were 35,000 years old.
Yes, those were when they were initially made, and it, they discovered that in that initial period of occupation, which is the first time that modern humans kind of came into the area,
mm-hmm.
35,000 years ago.
Yeah.
Virtually all of the paintings were done in that time period. They've dated them, you know, by the charcoal that was used and so forth to that time period. And so when I saw that picture or that painting, and I said to myself, that looks like it's been painted over or added to. That's the story. My story is set maybe 25,000 years ago at the second time period when the cave was being used and occupied. We all know how the ice ages worked. There were peaks in the ice ages when it was very cold and the glaciers covered everything. And then there were time periods in between the peaks of the glaciation where the ice receded and the weather warmed, and that's the time periods when people came and were living in the cave, because that's when there would have been a lot of wild animals and so forth to hunt.
Mm-hmm.
In between times, it was absolutely unused, and there were no people living there.
Mm-hmm.
So I knew that I wasn't one of the original painters of the cave, but I was someone who had been, this old shaman had a vision, and he needed someone who was an artist to put his vision on in the cave. And I was the one to do that, so for him.
Mm-hmm.
And the scientists all agree that these are, the artwork is, they're shamanic visions, they're various, they're the portrayal of different myths. And one of the, you know, when I saw this particular painting and knew what it was, I knew what the myth was that was being told there. Of course, they didn't have writing. And if you're going to, portray a myth as a teaching tool for the next generation of young men and women that are being initiated in this cave into
mm-hmm.
manhood and womanhood and to be hunters, these were teaching devices. And
mm-hmm.
I'm sure that other people and other modern-day shamans or spiritually attuned people who look at some of that artwork, they might see different or other myths and teachings that turn out to be the universal ideas of all of the great world religions and the mystical philosophies right down to the present. So
yeah.
That's what's in those caves. And
now, the name of the cave is Chavette. Is that right?
Chavette, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Chavette, yeah, the Chavette Cave, and it's in southern France. Now, I think I've seen a documentary on that, and actually a few shows ago we were talking about that, that doesn't it have, like, the astrological, the astronomy, all the different signs at one area of the cave that's actually, they actually line up with the star constellations?
That may have been another
cave.
I don't think this one had.
Oh, it's not the same one.
Alignment.
Okay.
There's one alignment with the sun that seems to have been possible,
okay.
at least through the original opening to the cave.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of built that into the story. But Werner Herzog, the famous documentary filmmaker,
mm-hmm.
I think it was just last year, he did a 3D. Documentary on this cave.
Oh, the new cave, right?
The Cave of Forgotten Dreams.
Right.
And,
Cave of Forgotten Dreams. That sounds like a wonderful thing to watch.
Oh, it was absolutely tremendous, and it's really the only way that any of us are ever going to get to see inside that cave, and that's why
yeah.
he did it in 3D, because the nature of the rock art and the painting, the artists would use. A swelling in the rock or a certain shape or a crack in the stone, and they would incorporate that into the artwork, into the maybe the hump of a buffalo or its shoulder or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And with that 3D photography that he used, you could see a lot of that. And it was just magical. It was absolutely magical. I just got chills, you know, from seeing some of those, some of the scenes that he had in that movie.
Mm-hmm. How neat. I wonder if it's available on Netflix.
I'm sure, I'm almost certain it is.
It's
it won't
probably
be in 3D,
not the same because you're not seeing it in 3D. Yeah,
exactly.
But
it's still well worth it. If anybody
and you know, it's like go out of your way to see if you can find it like on an IMAX or something. That would be really cool to see it on that level. Yeah, that would be really cool.
I've never visited this cave, even the, you know, the outside where the public certainly can go.
Now, don't we have a mock-up version of parts of the cave that people could go into and look at?
Werner Herzog said that they were planning on building something like that. The more famous cave of Lascaux in another part of France, they do have a reconstructed version that tourists can actually go into, so they don't have to can see that what the cave looks like and the artwork without damaging the cave.
Right.
Eventually, maybe there will be a reconstruction of the cave, Chauvet Cave, somewhere in the vicinity. But I, as he was... you have to kind of climb up from the a little river valley to where the cave entrance is.
Mm-hmm.
And they stood at the what is now the entrance of the cave, which is roughly at the level of the old entrance. And they panned across the hills of the area and looked down toward... there's a natural arch in the river at this point. And it must have been a tremendously significant and sacred place to have this marvelous cave right next to this magnificent stone arch through which the river flowed. And I stood up on that, or I saw myself standing there, and it just gave me chills to look out over that scene that I knew I had seen, you know, with my own eyes, you know, tens of thousands of years ago. It just boggles the mind.
You'll
see that scene. Like I had been there. I had seen it before.
How wonderful.
I just really enjoyed that 3D movie. So if anybody ever gets to see it, you should.
Well, I'm going to go out of my way to see what I can do for tracking that down. Because that definitely sounds like a treat for yourself. So your next book is going to be Mansions of the Leopard Mistress.
Yes.
That's quite a title.
One more time.
You want to tell them a little bit about, it's called Mansions of the Leopard Mistress.
Yes. Now, this is...
Jamie liked that one.
another lifetime of this avatar who was... in this particular lifetime as a young boy. And it's set in another actual and very famous archaeological site called Katal Hayuk. It's in south central Turkey. And it is the location of the first city-sized settlement of people. They were farmers. And unlike the hunters and gatherers of my first book. So it's a different way of life. And they are also the people who are credited with domesticating cattle. And it's from this place that all of the wild, or the domesticated cattle and on the whole planet originated from. So it's a very significant place.
That's just kind of a fascinating thing to even think about. One place in the whole world would be where it began and got cultivated. Yeah.
And so they have a different mythology than the hunters did, and they painted the walls of their houses. The architecture looks a lot like the mud brick pueblos of our southwestern Native Americans. and that's the mansion of the leopard mistress.
There we go. It's not what we would consider mansions nowadays, you know.
No. But
yeah,
there was there didn't seem to be any small villages scattered around the little town that was built on a couple of small hills that raised the houses up above the floodplain. And it's much more like Egypt, where they'd have an annual flood. And I think the mythology, they're going to be creation stories and stories about floods and earth mothers and, you know, along the lines of Demeter and Persephone, later Greek myth. And those are all planting culture myths.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what we're dealing with in this next book.
Wow, how exciting. Yeah, we were got to kind of talk, when I had visited with him the other day, we were talking about Harry Potter and how, you know, when she was writing all the different books, she literally had bags where all the different information was going to go into each of the books. And she knew ahead of time that there was going to be so many books and certain books, certain parts of the story were going to be in certain parts of the books. And when I was talking to Ted about that, he's like, oh, yeah, that's what I'm going to do too. And I'm like, okay, well, that's interesting.
Well, that's what I've been doing now for years. And I didn't know why I was doing that. I'd fill up folders with this, that, and the other. And now I see that each one of those folders relates to a different lifetime that I'm going to turn into a different volume in this series.
Yeah, that is so cool. That's very, very, very cool. I think it's just fascinating. Now, did you take some kind of a automatic writing class or something like that to kind of get yourself started in this? Or you just sat down one day with that vision, like you're saying, of the, the shaman popping his head in to see Little Bear, which, you know, is you as this young girl kind of a thing? Or was it a class that kind of just helped to activate that stuff for you?
Well, the thing that really kicked this into high gear was meeting an ascended master and angel channel.
Mm-hmm.
And her name is Araya Volkar, and she came as a guest speaker to Dr. Sharon's Interfaith guest speaker series on Wednesday nights that we have every week here.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't know from automatic writing or channelers or mediums or anything.
Mm-hmm.
And she took questions from the group, and then she answered them in the voice of either their guide or an ascended master that was most appropriate to answer that question.
Mm-hmm.
And oh my Lord, she channeled everybody from Jesus, Mary, and Joseph to Moses and Archangel Michael and everybody else. Yeah, it was the most astonishing thing that I have ever witnessed. And
kind of plethora of people to anybody and everybody could come through.
Yeah,
he
has a real gift. And I asked her. I had been transcribing some of Dr. Sharon's messages on her Sunday messages for purposes of her working on a book. And I asked this channeler if I could do that for her. You know, she'd be interested in that. She said, oh, yes. And so I started transcribing some of her readings and some of these sessions. Group sessions that she had done. And then, kind of as a trade for our services, she offered to give me and one other person that she was working with a quickie course in channeling, you know, how to do it yourself, you know, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that's what we're all to be about, not just listening to our teachers and our gurus and learning all of these wonderful principles, but we're to experience them for ourselves, to have a spiritual life. That's what I think that's all about. And so we went through this day-long, you know, kind of a seminar workshop one-on-one with her and showing us how to do this. One of the things that she did to kind of bring us along was an automatic writing kind of exercise. And I was astonished to see, and I was, the question I had, it was working on, was had to do with poverty consciousness and abundance and prosperity and so forth. And she had us do this little automatic writing thing. And the voice, or the writing, the voice of the writing was coming through was some merchant of Venice, you know.
Oh, wow, that's interesting. Yeah.
And then later,
what did it say?
I can't remember. I think it's written down somewhere, but
you're going to have to go to Venice now. I have to have a book in Venice and talk about that.
And then later.
Interesting.
Then later, she had, we were instructed how to, you know, ask the question of a guide who was appropriate to answer the question that we had. And again, it was about wealth and prosperity. And I was absolutely astonished to hear the voice of the famous King Midas, you know, the golden touch and all that stuff, coming through me and speaking these words, you know, of wisdom and advice. And I do remember what he said. But I was just amazed at that. And the process of getting the conscious mind, which is the ego mind, that kind of sits atop the whole, our whole consciousness, including the subconscious and the conscious parts of us. The problem, if we're going to have a spiritual life, is to get that ego moved off the center, out of the center, out of the way as a blockage. And then everything begins to flow. And what she did as part of the exercise in preparing to get into this state where you could receive these inspirations and these messages from your guides was to ask, to thank the ego for everything that it does for you. And assure it that you're not trying to kill it. And just to ask it to move to the side for a little while. You know, move to the side and watch the show.
Just sit
and,
in the corner
for a little while
you're working on something else, huh? Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's what she did, and I realized much later that that ego was still sitting off to the side watching the show as these novels just began to pour out of me. And they, it was very confusing at the time because everything, all these images and people and places and things that I'd never been before, you know, the girl in the cave and all these things just came, just were coming up in a rush. And I thought I was going crazy.
Yeah, I bet.
And I asked Dr. Sharon, who I was taking ministerial training classes from at the time, I said, I can't sleep at night. There's all these images coming up, and I'm on metaphysical overload. You know, what can I do? And she said, well, journal it. And so it wasn't exactly automatic writing, but I sat down and began writing one of these stories that was coming up, and it turned out to be the earliest one. You know, my little ego was off there on the side. The rational part of me was saying, well, let's take the first story first. And the rest will just have to wait their turn, right?
There you go.
And so I began writing, but it wasn't a journal. It was this first story. And as I said before, I was looking through the eyes of this young girl, and I knew where I was, and I knew I was going to be taken into the cave to make a new painting, but that's all I knew. And it kind of unfolded from there.
Well, yeah, and it's
a wonderful, just a wonderful story, and I really want to highly recommend it. You know, we've gone our half hour like we normally do, just whizzes by.
Yeah,
just,
it really whizzed by.
Yeah, I did. So again, we're talking to our guest chef, Mr. T.D. Austin, and the name of the book is People of the Bear Mother. And I really encourage everybody to go to Ted's address online, which is www.tdaustinps.com. And he's got his book pretty much available on any kind of form that you want, even Kindle, Nook, and then the and having it on audio as well. And he also has it on Amazon. So thank you so much, Mr. Ted. Wonderful to have you on again.
I'm glad to be here.
And I look forward to the mansions of Leopard, the Leopard Mistress. Yeah, what's up, Tony?
I wanted to tell, and thank you also. That was very interesting.
Very interesting. So we can figure out how to be Leopard Mistresses. There we go.
Yes.
I don't know about that.
Tony's like, yeah, I'm going to pass on that one. Anyway, so we want to thank our guests, and we'll see you next time here at the Transformation Cafe.
I'll be happy to come back anytime.
This has been a wonderful evening filled with lively and unusual dinner conversation and you. We are so glad you decided to join us. You make it special, and we are always happy to hear from you at Transformation Cafe. You can find out more about the people on our shows by clicking on our website, transformation-cafe.com, and checking out where all our other previous shows are available on demand, or here at Blog Talk Radio Transformation Cafe. If you are interested in appearing as a guest chef, you can email us at show@transformation-cafe.com. Thanks again. Travel well, and we will see you next time here at Transformation Cafe. Good night.